Thank you all for being patient. I'm really excited to have this session today because as I've noticed many names in attendance. There have been a lot of interest in the IEA seminars to Korea, and last year, as many of you are aware, the program wasn't running, but we're happy to say that the program is back, and we're really excited to have maintained this level of interest in this wonderful program. My name is Sarah Causer. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist at the Institute of International Education. I have the privilege to work on all of these IEA seminars and get to work with you as applicants and hopefully help you transition to being a recipient of this program. I'm actually very honored to be joined today by Blair McElroy from the University of Mississippi. Blair is a senior international officer at the University of Mississippi, and as a senior international officer, she has the oversight and responsibility for several departments within the Office of Global Engagement. These include the Office of International Programs, the Intensive English Program, the Study Abroad Office, and the U.S.-Japan Partnership Program. She also serves as the director of the Study Abroad Office with extensive overseas experience and risk and crisis management expertise. She teaches in the Department of Legal Studies and is a licensed attorney in the state of Mississippi. Blair, thank you so much for joining us today. I don't know if you'd like to say a quick hello to the audience right now. That would be great.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Blair McElroy from Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi, and I'm really so happy to be here because the Fulbright IEA program was just an amazing experience. I'm so glad to talk with you guys about it. And yeah, I guess we'll just get started, Sarah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Blair. And Blair will have a few slides later on in this presentation just to talk about her experience on this program. And I know she's still in touch with a lot of her cohort. So if you're unaware, these programs are cohort-based, and so she will be sharing that information as well. Before we actually dive into the presentation, I just want to let you know that this session is being recorded, and we will have time at the end for questions for both myself and Blair, that we will try to get to all the questions. But I will share the recording as well as the slide deck with everyone afterwards. So quickly diving into an overview of the program, which is really important to understand the background of the Fulbright, Fulbright program has the mission of fostering mutual understanding between nations, advancing knowledge across communities, and improving lives around the world. And it's really imperative that you remember and really resonate on this mission and really fold this into your Fulbright application. So if you do start any Fulbright application, they will ask you about what Fulbright means and why you're choosing to apply for Fulbright. So really keep this kind of at the heart of your application, and this really shows how it differs from other grant opportunities out there. The Fulbright program does work in partnership with 160 countries worldwide. You can see we work with a vast variety of accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, so on and so forth. For the program we're talking about today, we're really highlighting this administrator role and how this is an opportunity set aside just for administrators. Part of a brief history about Fulbright is it was established in 1946 by Congress. It is the government's flagship international educational and cultural exchange program, and it is still sponsored by the U.S. Department of State with funding from the U.S. government. IIE, which is who I am affiliated with, has the pleasure of administering the Fulbright Scholar Program on behalf of the U.S. Department of State. Quickly just highlighting, we do have a diversity and inclusion slide. Our mission statement and is on this slide as well as on our website. This is really important and integral to the entire Fulbright program that we want to make sure that we are encouraging people of all races, colors, ethnicities, religions, so on and so forth, to really consider opportunities with Fulbright to apply. We want to make sure that we are showcasing the best and brightest of the United States, but we want to make sure we are showcasing everyone inclusively within the U.S. So if you do have questions about diversity and inclusion, just let us know. Quickly showing you the numbers on this screen, we do award over 8,000 awards annually. Within the scholar and administrator realm, there's about 800 of these awards. The next slide I'll show you is how that 800 awards are really divided up between opportunities. But you can see we do have opportunities for visiting scholars to come to the U.S., as well as opportunities for both U.S. and foreign students to go abroad as well as come into the U.S. If you do have questions about that, we're happy to answer any questions. We do look to you as administrators on campus to really showcase these awards with your colleagues as well as with your students. The program itself is very close to having almost 400,000 Fulbrighters. So if you are applying and you do become a Fulbrighter, you'll be welcomed into a very large Fulbright family, and we'll be very happy to have you there. As I said, with those 800 awards, you can see the distribution on this slide. This is from the 2018-19, and this is how those awards ended up being distributed across the different activities available. So this does change yearly depending on successful applications that do come through. And so, but what I will say for the seminars, because they're to 7 different countries, that piece of the pie that you can see in that green sliver really does happen to pretty much stay at that 9%, but it can vary year in and year out depending on the amount each seminar brings for those individual countries. So quickly diving in to the IEA seminar opportunities, the IEA, as you can see, does stand for International Education Administrators. We use IEA to just cut that down, but they do take place in 7 different countries. For this current cycle, as you can see on the screen, we're only recruiting for 5. So Korea wasn't offered last year. It's being offered this year. Unfortunately, this year, we're not recruiting for India and Japan. So if you are kind of toying between different countries, just know that those 2 countries are not recruiting for the IEAs this year. And what's really important is to look at that professional profile, because each one of these countries is really looking for a very unique profile, which I will go in depth explaining what Korea in particular is looking for. Across the board, these seminars are intended to have broad personal and professional impact on you as the grantee. And from this experience, your home campus will also benefit from the increased knowledge of this host country's higher education system. This will aid in the development of programs, international student advising, and the broader global collaboration between your institution and these countries. Additionally, as grantees, you'll be able to broaden your network with the possible partnerships and cooperations through the other Fulbright IEA grantees as well. So again, you're going as a cohort of anywhere from 5 upwards of 15 people at a time. That's really important, and I'll highlight this a couple times, is to really think of your application in relation to your university. This is not just a personal application, but more broadly one that aims to increase institutional internationalization. And I know Blair will discuss this a little bit later on of how this program really does help personally, but also professionally and institutionally. Quickly diving into the eligibility for these awards, across the board, you must be a U.S. citizen in order to apply. And unlike some of the other awards within the scholar fold, a PhD or terminal degree is not required for these IEAs, so just keep that in mind. As you saw on that previous screen, what each award is looking for, the appropriate professional experience and accomplishments, as well as additional requirements, do vary country by country. So you'll want to take a look at the catalog of awards just to make sure you check all those boxes. But we'll go into exactly what Korea is looking for in just a minute. Additionally, I do see some previous IEA grantees on this call as well. You can have more than one Fulbright in your lifetime, so you can apply and receive an award to multiple IEAs. Just keep in mind there's a 2-year waiting period and that they do ask for you to really add additional justification as to why a second Fulbright, why the second country. We have seen it before with many of our grantees, but we just want to make sure you are also set up for success if you are applying for another award. So quickly diving into Korea, as I said, the program is back this year. We're so excited about that. This program in particular is actually a reciprocal exchange program. So while you are going over to Korea as an awardee, there is a small group of international education administrators from Korea who also visit the U.S. each spring for about 3 weeks doing very similar visits. It looks very similar to what you will be doing over in Korea, where they will be seeing selected schools, colleges, universities, cultural sites, government agencies, and also meet with Fulbright alumni. For you, this award takes place over 2 weeks in June. where as a grantee, you'll visit university international offices. You'll respond to questions about U.S. higher education. So you really are a knowledge and gatekeeper within that aspect. So you will be sharing your knowledge here in the United States in your role. For your knowledge, your first week is spent in Seoul. And during that second week, you'll venture outside of that city to other locations. And Blair, I know we'll talk about that a little bit as well. Every year, there's approximately 8 grants available for international education administrators who deal directly with students on a day-to-day basis and are actively involved in promoting international education on campus. And you should have 5 years of experience at a full-time level within international education. As an applicant, you can come from either a 2- or 4-year college or university or a nonprofit international education exchange organization. Please note that preference is given to applicants without significant professional visits to Korea in the past 5 years. This is professional visits, so keep that in mind. So personal travel does not count for that. The program also does state that it is not a vehicle for initiating or developing U.S. institutional linkage programs or for student recruitment or the establishment of branch campuses. So just keep in mind really what their goal is in that case. And then lastly, they always want us to let you know that unfortunately for this program, directors of English language programs and instructors of such programs are just not eligible for this program. So moving on, as you saw, we're recruiting for 5 different awards within the IEA realm this year. So you might be wondering, how do I select the right award? And so there are questions that really are to serve as a guiding discussion for you to have personally as well as with your campus. But really think, how has your campus been working to internationalize itself? Are they looking to create connections with certain countries? Is one of those countries listed on this? Is it Korea? Does your institution have any plans to increase cooperation? Could it be increasing the number of students from a country or your study abroad students to a certain country? So those are a few of the questions you'll want to think about within the context of your institution, is really where your institution is hoping to go and how can this seminar really help get you to that next step. Additionally, you'll want to ask about your personal professional experience in these countries. Have you been there within the last 5 years? Have you had extensive experience and developed contacts? That might mean that this might not be the best country, but another country would. So just keep that in mind. And then lastly, you'll want to ask what your professional profile is. And when it comes to Korea, they're really looking for those international education administrators who deal daily with students. We do have some awards that are that will make note that they're looking for senior administrators, presidents, provosts, deans, directors. But for this one in particular, they're really looking for that day-to-day interaction with students. So you'll want to make sure your professional profile does match for the correct award you're applying to. As I said, I will be sharing the slide deck with everyone afterwards. Typically, it will take about 5 days for it to go online with the archived recording, but you'll get access to any of these links. Our website and catalog of awards are really the best tools for you. On it, we have links to the application. We have links to an application guideline that actually walks you step-by-step through the application. And then we also have leading questions for what to include on different components for your application. Under this Learn section, you're already in a webinar right now. Congratulations. That's the first step you can take. But we also have webinars online that actually, again, walk you through the application, talk about the application in general, show you how to navigate the catalog of awards. So I really encourage you to utilize those tools. But if anything, I am in our IEA inbox every day. So reach out, ask a question if you do need help. I'm happy to set up any advising sessions with you also. And then the last thing I always like to point out is my Fulbright is an excellent place for you to actually register your interest to make sure you don't miss any emails in the future. So perhaps you're not ready to apply now. Sign up for my Fulbright so we can stay in touch with you in the future to make sure you don't miss when the next round of applications does open. So for the application component, you will see that you'll register an account through our application form, put in your biographical data, And from there, you'll be answering questions. You'll select the right award that you're applying to, which is really imperative that you select IEA, because if you don't change it to IEA, you'll actually get questions about your timeline, about sample class syllabi, things like that. And so you'll want to make sure that those are not components you need to upload, I promise. So just make sure you do select IEA and select the right country and award so you are grouped and receive the correct application to apply to. What is new this year is the seminar details. Previously, we had something called a statement of intent. It was 3 to 5 pages for you to really answer these questions as to why you're applying for this program. I think we've made your lives a lot easier because instead of that 3 to 5 pages, we've broken it up into 5 open-ended questions. And I believe the next slide really dives into those questions, so I'll hold on that for now. But keep in mind, these 5 open-ended questions are really your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to the reviewers and the potential host. Your answers really should be clear and compelling to audiences both inside and outside your field, so just keep that in mind. I also encourage you to develop your responses in words so you can share them with colleagues, but then also the system will time out, so I don't want you to lose any of those details and information you've entered. So I, again, strongly encourage you to develop it in Word and then just transition it into the application. So that's my pro tip for that. Your CV, you have up to 6 pages. And again, there's instructions on our website for this about font size, things like that. Your CV should be clearly organized and tailored to show how your credentials, your professional standing and accomplishments relate to international education. It should include your employment history, listing all items chronologically, starting with the most recent. The next piece across the board that you'll do is an institutional statement. All applicants are required to do this. You might be able to gather this knowledge from your website, from your colleagues in different departments. And again, there are leading questions on the website for what to include, but it should address the general information about your home institution. What type of institution is it? Is it a HBCU? Is it a Hispanic serving institution? Are you coming from a community college? What is the total enrollment numbers on your campus, the number of degrees offered, things really within that realm that the reviewers both here in the U.S. and then again in Korea will get a sense of what your institution is like. They also ask that you will include the number of international students on campus and where they're coming from, as well as study abroad opportunities available on your campus. Since you are applying to Korea, that is a requirement, is to include the number of Korean students on your campus as well as study abroad. So keep that in mind that for this one and also for Japan, which we're not recruiting for this year, they really want to know what those numbers are like. It's not a make or break it. They just want to see what your level of involvement with their country currently is. So keep that in mind. In this institutional statement, you can also list institutional partnerships, particularly with universities in the country where your grant is taking place, so in this case, Korea. And then you will also be able to list your future goals and plans for internationalizing the campus. Some campuses might have a 2025 or 2030 internationalization plan. Please reference that again in this institutional statement. As we dive into the letters of reference, what I will recommend is provide your recommenders with a copy of those seminar details, those 5 questions, as well as your institutional statement so they can reference that. And diving into those letters of reference, this is the second place where you'll see changes from previous years. Previously, you had to submit 3 letters of recommendation. Now it is only 2, so keep that in mind. Your recommenders evaluate your professional qualifications and potential for institutional impact, as well as your personal qualifications and qualities. So your question might be, again, all on the website, I promise, who can serve as these recommenders? One letter should come from your current supervisor or someone you report to at your institution. They should be familiar with your administrative skills and leadership success, while the other letter can come from any colleague, either at your own institution or another institution, who can speak to your personal attributes and interests within international education. You will not upload these letters directly. You'll actually register them in the application. The system will send them an email for them to log into a private portal to upload their letters of reference. on your end, you'll be able to see when those are uploaded. There'll be a nice little check mark, and then there will be the ability for you to send reminders and send that link again through your part of the system. Keep in mind, they do not have to submit before you submit your part of the application. You still have access to that section if you submit early and giving them more time through the deadline, but everything should be in by the deadline. So if anyone has questions about that, just let me know. And like I said earlier, there are seminar instructions online that we really encourage you to utilize. So as I said earlier, in lieu of that statement of intent, we're asking you to follow and answer 5 open-ended questions that all have character limits listed here as well as in the application. The first question is about your professional biography. It's your ability to highlight your educational background, professional and administrative experience, your most significant professional accomplishments, as well as key responsibilities in your current position. This should include information on your professional affiliations, memberships, community service, publications, honors, and awards. If there's other additional information that you think falls within this, again, please include it there. Under the country selection and professional relevance, this is where you're really going to state why you're applying to the IEA seminar for this country. We ask that you describe how your professional responsibilities relate to this grant, including any achievements in the development of international initiatives or systems. What expertise can you share with these peers in your host country? So in Korea, what can you actually offer and present on to let them know and get a better idea of higher education here in the U.S.? And then we also ask that you describe your experience with this country. If you visited the country previously, any communications or interactions with the country, such as setting up partnerships, cultural engagements, or experience sending and receiving students. Outcomes and impact is by far my personal favorite part to read in these applications, but this is for you to explain how your participation in this IEA seminar will contribute to the international education goals on your institution. What is your anticipated impact that this participation will have for your institution and wider community at home? Please be specific and also consider the outcomes with potential to be broad and sustainable. Additionally, we ask that you'll share what you have learned with your home institution and others, so please elaborate on that within this section. And then you can also share your anticipated impact and that your participation would have within your professional development and career. And so we see a lot of people talk about the associations they're a part of, and we see a lot of people upon returning going to NAFSA, going to these larger conferences and presenting on what they've learned and how they've developed their institution. So those are all things that you can really include within this area. And then the last large specific topic is your personal qualities. We ask that you describe your ability to be adaptable, culturally sensitive, collegial, and how you may serve as a cultural ambassador for the United States. That is a very important part because this program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, so you are an ambassador for the United States. So you will be wearing that hat as well. The last section, you have about 500 characters, is for additional information. If there's anything you feel the reviewer should know about you that doesn't fit in those above 4 questions. So before I do pass the reins over, I just want to let you see the quick timeline. It's on our website as well. But the deadline is November 2nd of 2020. Forgetting what year it is already. You will find out in January of 2021 whether or not your application was recommended or not. And so what that means is your application is reviewed here in the U.S. by previous alumni of this IEA grant. And so they make that first decision. So you'll be notified at that point whether or not your application is going overseas for final selection. If your application does go overseas, it will be reviewed in Korea. They make that final selection for that cohort, and you'll be notified sometime in February whether or not you're a finalist. And then your application, if you are a finalist, you would go on that 2-week seminar grant in June of 2021. So with that, I'm really excited that my portion of talking at you is over and that you get to actually hear from Blair and her experience on this wonderful opportunity. So Blair, I'm happy to pass the reins to you.
Thank you, Sarah. So As Sarah mentioned, my name is Blair McElroy. I'm from the University of Mississippi. I currently serve as the Senior International Officer, and I'm also the Director of Study Abroad, which previously had been two separate positions, but I'm wearing two hats. So Sarah had sent me some prompts and some questions, and I think they're really good, so I'm just going to kind of go down these different questions and what I thought, how I thought through it, and also give some feedback from others in my cohort. As Sarah mentioned, we're all still in touch, and even though it's been over 2 years now, we still have a group text that's going, and it's been a really wonderful, you know, network for all of us. So I decided to apply. You know, one of the reasons is because of the prestige of the Fulbright program. Saying that you're a Fulbrighter is really an incredible thing. And I was also looking for some ways to, you know, to strengthen my resume, because at the time I was serving in an interim role as the interim SIO, and, you know, wanted to make sure that my resume stood out. In case of applying for that position, which I luckily eventually got. The IEA program is a perfect fit when you have a staff position. So my position is a staff position. It's not a faculty position. So I'm not able to take a whole sabbatical or be away for a long period of time. So the 2 weeks in the summer was actually a really great you know, great fit for me, and I think everyone on the program. Of course, you know, increasing our professional networks as an alum and an awardee has been, you know, really valuable, and establishing a connection to the Fulbright program. This is some feedback that others in the cohort had provided, but on my campus specifically, and in Mississippi, we've been really trying to get our Fulbright Association kind of started, and we're, you know, we have kind of in-state rivalries, but we're trying to use Fulbright to bring us all together, you know, as, you know, faculty, administrators, and staff on campuses to, you know, to have more of a global Mississippi. So, so yes, we're all working together on a Fulbright Association for the state, and this has been, it's been a great way for me to be engaged with that group, because I can say that I am a Fulbrighter. So as far as Korea specifically, I think what Sarah mentioned about, you know, a connection to the country is important for your application. For me in particular, I was advising students to go to Korea, and one of my goals was to increase the number of students who were studying abroad in Korea, mainly for a semester or a year. And we also had quite, I think Korea at the time was the second largest cohort of incoming study abroad students. I'm sorry, short-term visiting students who come to the University of Mississippi. We had 30 to 40 every fall and spring, which was really great. I also knew on our campus that our international studies major had recently hired a scholar to focus on Korea, and our international studies major, the students in that major will choose a region and a language to learn, and East Asia is one of those, and they really wanted to increase their Korean scholars in the program. So this opportunity would help me work with those students and also with that institute on our campus. We also had recently gotten a Freeman grant focused on internships in East Asia. So as part of that committee, I was able to talk with the students who are applying about locations to go and tell them about Korea. So it really was a great fit for me. From others in the cohort, so one of the ISSS participants said that she wanted to relate to students, and that's, I think that all of us wanted to relate to Korean students who were on our campus and help them to, you know, to be comfortable there, know that they had someone who understood a little bit about where they were coming from. Another participant said that they had new partnerships in Korea, and no one had ever visited Korea to be able to advise students. And another participant was the National Scholarship Advisor for her institution, and she wanted to help students with scholarship applications like the CLS. One of the questions was about making the case to your leadership and administration about this opportunity and you know, demonstrating that it's worthwhile. And I will say that I had an incredible or have an incredible supervisor who recognizes that, you know, the Fulbright name and having our people doing these really great experiences is important for the university. The university, just its reputation, and also for personal professional development. So I was lucky in that case. Let's see. As far as the grant experience, overall, I would say it was absolutely incredible. I wish I had more pictures I could share with everyone. Our group was eight of us, and we got very close. It was a variety. There were a variety of people and experience in international education. So several ISSS advisors, two of us from study abroad, one from scholarships. So, you know, there were a lot of different perspectives here, and it has been something that we have continued to talk about. I mean, especially this summer with everything that's happened in international education and all of the changes, we, you know, it was so wonderful to have a group of people who I knew would give me advice and, you know, things that they were doing on their own campuses and just bounce ideas off of. It was a really wonderful group, and I hope that all of the groups work this well together. Our comparative higher international education knowledge definitely increased. The program starts in Seoul, so the first week you're in Seoul, and you go to a lot of different universities there and see how, I mean, and the program chooses a lot of different universities, private, public, small, large. I mean, there are so many different, the Sky universities. So we learned a lot about the different ways Korean students get to college and understood, were able to understand a little bit more about why they would choose to go to the University of Mississippi, for example, and study abroad. The site visits that were in the program, if we had an existing partnership with that university, it was really great to either see the people you had already met or put a face with a name, and also be able to share what the university was like to outgoing students. So when I got back home, I could tell them, I have now visited Busan, and I can tell you all about it. The last night, we were able, this was kind of a surprise, but we were able to go to the Department of the ambassador's residence. So the ambassador did not, it was vacant at the time, and Marie Royce, who is the Assistant Secretary of State for Educational and Cultural Affairs, was visiting South Korea, and so we were able to go to the ambassador's residence, which was beautiful, listen to her speak, and have a really nice experience, and meet other people and people who worked in the State Department. As far as takeaways, professionally, obviously, we all have a much better understanding of the higher education system in Korea. The historical background of universities, the struggles that they have for enrollment at the time, right now, and what that means for us, U.S. institutions who may recruit in Korea or, exchange with Korean universities. As far as institutionally, I've created a closer connection to incoming students, which it's always been really important to me to have, to be visible and to be open and have an open door for any international student or study abroad student. And so this opportunity and the knowledge that we gained has been just invaluable for that. Assisting with the Korean Student Association and creating a faculty association at the University of Mississippi, we don't have very many faculty associations, kind of affinity associations, and that was one of my goals, was to help new faculty and faculty who'd been there forever to have a group. And to Oxford's very small where our university is, and so we don't even have a Korean restaurant or anything. And so one of my goals was to try to connect better with South Korean faculty and others, of course. I mentioned that personally, we have stayed in touch and use each other as a network and reference, and it's been really wonderful. Our group text continues to have notifications, which is really great, and it's been, like I said, so helpful these last 6 months or so. As far as pro tips for interested applicants, we kind of talked about this in our cohort group text. Just connecting your application to your personal goals. I think we all had similar goals, but just making sure you say that, say your personal goals with the program, and specifically why Korea. Being authentic, being open-minded, and the last thing, if you are awarded, make sure to take comfortable shoes and casual clothes, because we got really stressed out about having the right and appropriate clothing during our orientation, and you don't need pantyhose. This is one of my biggest takeaways: is we didn't need the tights that the Underwoods told us that we needed. So, on that note, and that's really supposed to be a joke. On that note, I'll see if we have any questions, or give it back to Sarah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Blair. And I've never heard someone say that about the hose, so I'm definitely keeping that one for my future presentation. Thank you.
Sure.
That would make me very happy. I really appreciate your takeaways. I know we are getting questions, and another plug to everyone in attending. We're about to wrap up our portion, so please submit any questions you have, either for myself or for Blair, about her experience. And Blair, I'm probably going to kick a question back to you just to talk about, and you can think about it for another slide or two, but just how busy your days were on these every day, how many institutions they are packing in. If we can address that in just a minute, that'd be great. So quickly wrapping up the presentation portion, I really hope everyone on this call is interested in applying for the IEA to Korea. However, if you're really just seeking other information to try and decipher what's the best award for you, great. We do have two more upcoming webinars. There is the opportunity to Germany and France. Those are happening in December because their applications aren't due till February 1st. And I did see a question asking, can I apply for more than one IEA in a cycle? Unfortunately, the answer is no. So the reason we put on each one of these sessions is, and we urge you to determine which is the best fit for you, is because you only can apply to one award in a cycle. And this does also apply to the scholar teaching and research opportunities. You can only apply for a teaching or research or an IEA. So it's only one in a cycle. And so the next cycle will kick off in early February. So if you choose to apply then, that's for you to know as well. So thank you again for submitting that question. On this screen is my email address, iea@iie.org. Feel free to send any questions there. If you want to send your CV for me to look at to see do you meet those criteria of 5 years, is it the right position, what you're doing, I'm happy to take a look at your CV, provide any feedback. I'm happy to set up any advising calls with you if someone just really needs to talk through which award might be best for them. That is my role. I'm here to help. And with that, Blair, if you've had a second to think about the crazy days that you have on the seminar, please feel free to highlight that.
Sure, that's a great point. Just for expectations, it is an incredibly busy program. You put so much into that 2 weeks. So I think I got a little bit off track, but that first week is in Seoul, and it's at least, so at the very beginning, you go to the Fulbright office, and you have kind of a historical background, some lectures, presentations on that, and also some presentations on the Korean higher educational system in general. And then starts your visits to the various universities in Seoul. And that is one, actually it was more like two a day for the whole 2 weeks, of course during weekdays. And then we did have an afternoon and a day that we did some tourist things in Seoul. But then the second week you are in a bus traveling down to Busan. We stopped in Daegu for Kimyeong University and then visited some universities in Busan. And so it is very busy. It's a lot of information. And so we had some Google Docs that we kept together to kind of remind ourselves about each university so that, you know, we could really, you know, kind of evaluate our entire experience once we got back and kind of reflect on it and think about how it would help our institution once we got back. So still have those resources from our visits there. But yes, it is a very lots of long days, and it is hot in Korea in the summer, but, you know, really, I would absolutely tell you to do it. I would do it again if I could.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Blair. So with that, that does conclude our presentation portion. Obviously, Blair and myself will be here to answer any questions. So, Chinny, can we open up the questions?
Yes, so we do have a few questions here. Let's see. So are the reviewers looking for existing networks with Korea, institutional partners, or students? What if there is an interest in exploring these opportunities?
That is a great question. And then, so I'm going to answer my take on this, and I'm curious to see if Blair has thoughts about her and her cohort and their experience before going on this program, how developed these programs were, if any. But traditionally, what they're looking for when they do ask that question for, you know, the number of Korean students, do you have partnerships, is they just want to see, where is your institution now? Are you experienced but looking to build upon that? Do you not have experience and this is kind of going to be your first open site to explore this? Korea is very open on either of these. It doesn't discount you either way, but they're really just looking for how can they help and work with you and partner with you by bringing you on this IEA. So it really, in the vein of Fulbright, it's always it depends. But really what they're looking for is just to see what is your institution's current experience with this country so they know where they can go with that. And to my knowledge, they like to have a mix of institutions who maybe don't have a lot of fully developed programs and then some that do, because, again, that helps you network with each other. Blair, did you experience anything different within your cohort and experience within the country?
I think that's right. The I think about half of us really, you know, had already worked with Korean institutions and had either exchanges that, exchange programs that were really, you know, popular, and then some that had just started partnerships and were really curious about how it was going to work. So, but I know about half of us did have a large group of Korean students on their home campus. So there were some motivations, you know, from recruiting Korean students as well, and connecting with them once they got to the U.S. But yeah, it was about half and half, I think.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Claire.
All right. So let's see. Our next question is, I am the assistant director of our international education office. However, due to COVID-19, I've been reassigned for the fall semester to do contact tracing. Would I still be eligible to apply?
I'm going to make a very large assumption, I hope it's not a wrong one, that this is a very temporary role, that your main role is still that assistant director of international education. That's what you'll be returning to post, hopefully, COVID. And if that's the case, I would like to talk with you directly, if you don't mind emailing me, because I do want to double check with Korea. But my understanding is, yes, you would still be eligible because, again, everyone is wearing multiple hats these days. So I can't see that discounting your application. But, again, if you could reach out to me, I'd be more than happy to follow up directly with the commission over in Korea just to make sure that you would be eligible, because we don't want you to waste your time this cycle if not. But I can't imagine that would, again, discredit your application.
All right. So our next question is, in the scenario that one is fortunate enough to be selected, if the pandemic does not permit the program to take place in June 2020, will participants be June 2021, will participants be able to defer to a later point in time specifically for the Korea program?
Ooh, very good question. So what I would say here is, again, it's a very much a case-by-case basis with each country. What I can say is that is what we saw this year, because obviously the pandemic did hit during when a lot of the IAs were taking place. So I'm going to give the fuller answer is, within scholar and student context, is deferrals are not allowed under Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board policies. However, because these seminars are 2 weeks, you're not there 10 months trying to defer into the next academic or cycle year. There was some flexibility with these commissions, and they made their own determinations on being able to move those cohorts back to allow for those cohorts to take place in the event that they had already selected. And so what I can say is a lot of those decisions led to why India and Japan aren't recruiting this year, because they had to move that cohort a bit and they didn't want two cohorts very close together. So again, each country had to make very difficult decisions this cycle. So having seen those difficult decisions, if this is the case, if something does continue, they would, again, have a very open and honest conversation with you as the grantees to figure out what the best decision moving forward is. I hope that answers your question. If you do have additional questions about that, again, please reach out to me.
Okay, let's see. Our next question is, if I spent the last 5 years working for a for-profit third-party provider for study abroad and just started my new position in the International Programs Office at a community college, would you recommend that I wait to apply for a seminar?
Great question. I know Germany in particular does say that they wish for you to have at least 1 year under your belt at your current institution in order to apply. That is not said for some of these other countries. So you are, obviously, you meet the eligibility criteria across the board. So I would probably encourage you just to take a hard look at each award to see which one would best fit your background if they have that stipulation listed, but you are eligible to apply. But keep in mind, what would probably make a stronger application, let's say you apply, you don't get this year, your application would be stronger with the more time at your current institution, because again, you'd really have that solid understanding of what your institution is looking for and how they're trying to internationalize. So that is a great question. You're not ineligible to apply, but I would definitely take a look at those specific awards and, again, follow up with me for more details. That'd be great.
All right. So our next question is it required to attach a TOEFL test as an administrative requirement for applying for scholarships?
That is not required for the IEA. If you were interested in any of the other awards, I'm not sure what you're interested in exactly, but different awards have different requirements. But in terms of the International Education Administrators for the U.S. Scholarship Overseas, that is not a requirement. And it does trigger my mind to also say each one of these seminars, and I think Blair said this as well, is done entirely in English. So you do not have to have foreign language requirements for any of the IEAs. So thank you for asking that question.
All right, Sarah, and I believe that that concludes our questions for today.
Wonderful. Well, we get to end early. We get to give everyone some time back in their day, but I'm very appreciative that you all took the time out on a Friday especially to learn more about this. As I said, it's being recorded. I'll send it out to you hopefully by the end of next week. But once again, I just really want to thank Blair for her time and her expertise. If any of you do have questions that you do wish to address to Blair, you can send them to me and I'll share them with her directly and try and get her feedback. But we really do hope you take this time to consider applying, and do reach out with any questions. But once again, thank you so much, Blair, for your time. I really appreciate your insight.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Perfect. All right. Well, we hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and you all continue to stay safe and healthy during this time. Take care, everyone.